Hi, and welcome to the Dewing Grain podcast. Dewing Grain are independent and local grain traders. From seed supply to harvest movement and storage contracts, they can offer you the best strategies to achieve the highest prices for your harvest. Each week on our podcast, we begin with the Dewing Grain Market Report, giving you up-to-date information and analysis, followed by the Farm Chat, where we catch up on agricultural issues with a guest or two, whilst occasionally sampling a beer, Andrew's favourite bit. So let's start with Andrew Dewing with this week's Market Report.
Welcome to the Market Report. What follows are my thoughts or gut instincts on what the market is going to do. It is not an instruction to trade. Any decision to trade is yours. Okay, Market Report for week commencing 24th of July 2023. It's all happening, isn't it? What a week. Well, actually, it is happening politically. It's happening with Russia have this week bombed a load of grain facilities, threatened to sink ships that are Ukrainian or anything going towards or coming from Ukraine, carrying weapons allegedly. The Ukrainians have retaliated and said Russian ships are fair game as well, which is, you know, a reasonable tactic, I guess. The price of wheat has gone £20 up in about 5 minutes flat. It's utterly kicked off. And this morning on the radio, the Indians are going to ban the export of rice because they're trying to keep the prices down ready for next year's election. And they've had monsoon rains that have damaged masses of the rice crop. So the world has a whole load of issues going on, the biggest being this Russian latest, you know, push the price up type moment. At the same time, it isn't all happening, is it? It's raining. The forecast is pretty grim. There's rain every day for at least 8 days on the trot. People are snatching at crops if they can possibly have a go at it. And it's going to mean drying charges. It's going to mean not, you know, getting to the field, getting everything set up, and then it rains again, and all sorts of misery and reasons to worry, if you like. But it's, on the one hand, the price is going through the roof and everyone's feeling a bit cheerful about that. And it's given the opportunity, the big debate on that is it a selling opportunity? Is this the moment where an outside source has pushed the price up artificially? Because if you look at it in the context of, you know, the yield looks like it's going to be there, the quality is going to be slightly impaired, so there's bucket loads more feed wheat out there. Usage and export competitiveness, we are not competitive, we are not going to export, the French are not going to export, they've got to come down in price to compete, and there's going to be a bucket load of Ukrainian wheat coming into Europe. The European market's locally saying, look, stop it, we can't have that, it ruins our market. But the only way out for the Ukrainians is that way, so they'll have to come up with some sort of scheme of exporting via Europe without any spilling out the side and undermining local markets. All of those things lead to a lower price somewhere down the line. But on the other hand, what you don't know is, what does Russia do next? Is it going to escalate? Is someone going to sink cargo with wheat on it? Which would be incredibly, you know, that really would, if you got a Ukrainian ship sunk, they would go back and sink a Russian ship. The Russians wouldn't be quite so sure about their exports. One sure thing is they do need to export. This is like, it's completely confusing about what to do next. If you purely looked at the supply and demand side of things and the market somehow sorting itself out like it did before, this is a selling opportunity. We're in the 200s and it's just gone through the roof in a week for something nothing to do with, you know, we're on the brink of harvest and we should be seeing a bit of pressure come, and it's gone the opposite direction. So that's the kind of biggest thing of the week. And as far as the rain is concerned, well, you know, to be absolutely fair, if you look at the Dewing Grain podcast weather predictions, prior to harvest every single year for the last four harvests, we've been right. And 3 weeks ago, we called the jet stream getting stuck, low pressure coming across, lots of rain. Well, that has proven to be completely accurate. And for the people who criticise old superstitious types, St. Swithin's, it rains every day. If it rains on St. Swithin's, it rains every day after. It rained on St. Swithin's, it has rained every day after, and is looking like it's going to keep raining until we get into August, which is not great. Right, so you already know that, obviously, and you don't need me to remind you. It isn't just you worrying about it, I will add. So I'm going to go through commodities one by one. I've got Ben in here with me to talk about oilseed rape as a specific, because, quite bluntly, that's been incredibly volatile as well. So I think I'll start with that one and say, right, Ben, what's happened on oilseed rape?
Okay, well, as you say, Andrew, rapeseed, again, has been massively volatile. Harvest started in Europe and yields weren't great. They were already down. Anecdotally, what we've seen in the UK is yields are also down. Average at best. Yeah. No, definitely. And also there's been some very bizarre hailstorms that have really hit crops hard.
Yes, taking some out, isn't it? you inspected a field with Webby, and it definitely had it.
Yeah, absolutely gone. And then, you know, we spoke to a few other growers, and they said, yeah, no, we had that hailstorm, and it went through a band across Norfolk and just hit some rapeseed fields. And I think there's been the same has been true in the Midlands. There's been rape been hit by hail there. So
apparently it's only Frontier customers who've been hit by hail.
Haven't they got a spray for that?
No, it's God. That's not true. Yeah, it's non-selective, but it's where it's hit, it's been damaged.
Yeah, and it's just bizarre that where it's hit, there's been all-seed rape field, this hailstorm.
Yeah.
So I think the volatility has also come from the fact that the heat dome in America has really, you know, is causing issues over there, and it's not clear when that's going to clear out. So rapeseed prices, definitely volatile. I think peaks in the market, you know, sell a bit, and then let's just see where it goes.
I mean, the heat dome in the States is on the soya crop.
Yeah.
There's a drought in Canada, which is going to impact, you know, we're going to come on to malting barley in a minute, but all of the yields of canola and everything are down, projected the most recent ones.
Yeah.
And on top of that, what about the European heat wave, Sharon?
This is the second one. Sharon is the second one, isn't it? We had the Cerberus was the first one. They've been in southern Europe, Spain, Greece, Italy. There's no doubt that that is having an impact further north because, you know, it's 47 degree heat and they're not getting any rain at all.
Right. Okay, so, I mean, to see the price back up to 400 pre-bonus is a good moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we're all kind of like, whew.
Yeah, we're happy about that.
And we have pushed one or two people to get the harvest, you know, bearing in mind what happened last year and the potential of Europe to import rapeseed from other places, you know, we're putting some in the bank, aren't we?
We are, yeah. I think if you haven't sold any, some at that level or close to it is a good starting point.
Yeah, and the rest of it, we're not pushing anyone to sell all of it. Some people want to just get the cash in. Because of the volatility, it could go a lot more. It could drop back, but we're trying to be grown up about it, aren't we? Now it's sort of rallied 60 quid from its worst moment.
It's a good moment to do it, and then I think, you know, you've just got to be a bit wary about how these yields come in now.
Yeah, okay, well, hopefully. The next thing is you're confronted with horrendous sounding drying charges. Oil is a hideous thing to dry. It's got 40-odd% oil in it. You can't cook it because it'll set your dryer on fire and be quite an impressive fire that will melt the whole thing. So it is a real pain to dry. And your choice is £400 a tonne for something less however many pounds worth of drying versus a lot less of that something coming into the barn, and maybe not at all if it gets hit by a hailstorm or continuous rain or whatever. So it's one of those Hobson choice moments. But anyone who owns a dryer knows how long their dryer is going to be tied up drying rape when they could easily be using that dryer to dry lots and lots of barley or wheat or something else. And that's what we're facing. It's glum, isn't it? Okay, thanks very much, Ben.
Thanks.
So I'm going to go on to malting barley, which is the most sort of happening thing in Norfolk at the moment. At this moment in time, the winter malting barley crop that's come in is predominantly good. There's been a number of the early tons that were too thin, too low on retention, and they're not savable. We mentioned this last week. We're going to put a base in there. You can't save everything, and some things you can't screen up. So below 75 retention, we've been kicking it out. One or two malters are hinting they might go down to 70, but without actually physically having a contract with that written into it, I'm not inclined to really follow that. What we don't know is what's going to happen next in terms of the spring barley. So you could guess it was a good thing to buy and try and pay a malting premium for it, and then find out the spring crop is brilliant and you're sitting there with something that nobody wants and it's worth £70 a tonne less. So we're kind of stuck. 75 min retention is about where we're at, and maybe it will move down to 70. You know, if you've got it and you haven't got to move it on farm and it's a below acceptable level, hold your breath if you possibly can. I think there may be hope for you yet. At this precise moment, in terms of the weather, because, you know, when you get rain on a crop, you worry about it. I don't think the germs are going at this point because the weather is cool. I mean, the heat wave in southern Europe, but up here is 18 to 20 degrees, and that's not doing any damage. So it is raining regularly on it, but it isn't getting baked in between and contracting the little grain down. So I think at this moment, I'm okay with what's going to come next if you could get cutting it. If you prolong the stuff standing in the field for a whole week and a half, by that time, a very sensitive crop that is bred to malt, i.e. react to moisture hitting it, you are asking for a bit of trouble to expect it not to give up the ghost, wave the white flag and germinate. So it's kind of, yes, I wrote three words down: worried, hopeful and philosophical. So worried, yes, I am worried, inevitably. One, I think some of the spec of the later cut stuff will be in trouble. At this moment, it is not in trouble, so I'm not seeing anything to make me leap off a bridge. Am I hopeful? Yes, the weather's remaining cool, and I'm sure with the combining capacity and the intelligence out there on farm to make the right decisions, I think we will see a lot of the crop come in. Bearing in mind, saving malting barley premium over feed £70 a tonne and paying a drying charge, which could be £20 a tonne or more if it's really wet, is mathematically, even the dumbest of students can work out that it's still £50 better off, if you like. So that you've got to make a decision on that and not whinge about the drying charges, because there's going to be an awfully large amount of stuff that needs to be dried. Most of the stuff so far has not been wet, so it's been okay. It's up to now, and I reckon we're 60% through it in this part of the world on the winter barley. But the spring barley is staring you in the face, not quite fit mostly, but coming on quicker than we'd like. And the cool, wet weather will probably hold it back a bit. But when the gates are open, everyone's going to be cutting everything at the same moment, which is always an exciting time for a storekeeper. So with the weather cool and wet, I think we're okay. And therefore, the worried aspect of it is not high on the Richter scale at the moment. Am I hopeful? Yeah, that is very high. My hopes are high that we maintain lots of the malting quality. And if it doesn't all work out, philosophical, in the end, you know, be it grain merchant, storekeeper or farmer, if you worry about what you can't control, in the end, you're going to go nuts. So, yeah, I've seen it before. I've been disappointed before with harvest, but we'll get round it. And if you've got problems, so's probably 99% of the other farmers in the room, and the people who buy the product have got a problem because it isn't there. They'll move the goalposts. So philosophically, keep sane. And as I say, if the weather stays cool, it's, you know, there's lots of things you like hot and wet, like your early morning cup of tea. But at the moment, cool and wet is the best thing that could come your way. Yeah, one other thing, if you are going to cut, this is where harvest movement is important. Obviously, if you're going to make a decision to try and save your malting barley by steaming into it when it's really wet, your problem could come with harvest movement. Harvest movement to some companies is not quite the same as harvest movement to others. And if everybody's cutting wet grain, everyone's going to want to move it very quickly. If you cut it very wet, you shove it somewhere where you aren't able to keep it properly, you will lose its germination for another reason. So your contract partner, the person you're selling it to, this is the moment where you'll find out whether harvest movement is actually harvest movement. We've had experience of that with some feed barley this last week. We notified, you know, 2 weeks ago the stuff was ready to go, and we're still waiting for fixing. So I think we've just got them for now. But that's been a game that's been played, you know, expensive contract. We won't give them fixings, which is, you know, that happens a lot of the time. So don't compare people who do move things quickly with people who don't. It's not the same thing. All right, I had that little whinge 140 times before, by the way. So moving on to wheat. Now, we've talked about the dynamic of whether it's good or whether it's not. These prices I did not expect to see. We've been slightly short on the market. We're caught on it. It's a political thing I didn't expect. What we think is going to happen is the yield is going to be okay. It's not going to be brilliant because I think the kilo weights are lower. Didn't get the sunshine, had too much rain. At the moment, I'm sure some of the Hagbergs are still there. I am worried about the Hagbergs. I'm worried about the protein levels of milling wheat. I think both of them are going to be low, and I think that's going to create a bigger heap of feed wheat. We're not competitive export-wise, neither is France. We're actually priced too close to the French at the moment, so there's lots of room for our market to go down within its own place in the market. And yeah, on top of that, there is no demand for the product that we're selling particularly. So that's a glum prospect. You've got Vladimir Putin on your side. So, you know, price is one thing. Reality about movement and stuff and who's going to buy it is another. And don't forget, the world is on fire at the moment. Let's be clear. So extra feed wheat, yeah, I think on the whole, the world will sort itself out. And this is a selling opportunity which has come out of nowhere. Okay. Feed barley, I think, is too low in price, but I can't sell it to someone export-wise and make any more money. Just feels too low against malting barley, feels too low against wheat. There isn't that much feed barley out there as far as we're concerned, so if you can hold that one, hold it. It's certainly, once the harvest pressure and the spring barley crop's gone, I think there'll be better days, or there will be better days. Two or three little notes for to think of. Podcast Walk is next week, or this week, on this podcast going out on Monday. So on Thursday the 27th, 2 p.m, the What Three Words location to park your vehicle is Darling, Limits, Vows. Okay, so 2 p.m. Thursday the 27th in Swanton Abbot, right by the church, if you want to have old-fashioned directions. Yeah, That's that. One other thing to look out for, well, two things actually. One, we're going to have a new feature coming up shortly, which should create a lot of interest on our social media. And I'll keep you waiting on that one, but it's quite brilliant. Very, very topical. And the other one is like the best fashion item and political statement you could possibly make coming your way. You must keep an eye out for the latest Doing Grain fashion item, which will be announced next week. And boy, oh boy, we've hit the jackpot with this one. Anyway, with that, have a dry day, or 2 hours of dry, somewhere in the middle of a week of misery. Okay? All the best. Thank you for listening. Please remember that any decision to trade on this opinion is yours.
The Doing Grain app will keep you updated with real-time industry news, data analysis, and insights into the market, giving you all the information you need to make informed trading decisions. A commodity selling feature enables you to source prices and receive direct offer notifications, informing you on what Doing Grain are looking to buy and at what price. Search Doing Grain on the App Store or Google Play to download. And with all of these features in your pocket, you'll have more time to sit back and listen to our podcast. To set up a trading account with us, call 01263 731 550 or email info@doinggrain.co.uk. And now it's time for the Farm Chat.
Okay, today I am welcoming a brand new member, or 1 month's worth of brand new, of the Doing Grain team. So welcome, Vince Cotts.
Good afternoon.
And Vince has joined us as our accountant.
Brilliant.
I've had lots of phrases about accountants in the past on previous podcasts, and none of them have been particularly polite. But so far, Vince, you seem to be not like all them others.
Well, that's very kind of you, Andrew. Thank you very much.
I'm very greatly relieved. Anyway, so you decided to come to Aylsham. Where have you been before? Give us your track history and how you managed to get stuck in a little office in Aylsham.
Okay, so I went to sixth form college at Paston, North Walsham. I'm Norfolk born and bred, up on the coast near Cromer for the early years of my life. Went to school at Cromer, then to sixth form at North Walsham. Mm-hmm. Thought about university, but it really wasn't for me. I wanted to get out and earn some money. So in my last term at sixth form college, I decided to reach out to a few accountancy firms. Always liked maths. It kind of sort of made sense for me to look at careers that included mathematics. And accountancy seemed an obvious choice. So I reached out to some local accountancy practices, and Lovell Blake in North Walsham actually wrote to me and offered me in for an interview, for which I went to the interview and got the job. So I started in the June of that year.
So what year was that?
1990, I think. It's a few years ago.
Yeah.
So 1990, joined Lovell Blake in North Walsham, spent a little bit of time out there, and then moved to the Aylsham office. So both of those offices are sort of local offices to Lovell Blake. They have many offices in other locations, such as Norwich and Lowestoft, etc., etc. Quite local offices, so quite small teams of people.
Very farm-orientated, aren't they?
Yeah. So the practices in Aylsham and North Walsham, quite diverse, but quite a high percentage of agricultural clients.
We did actually have one of the Lovell Blake team who managed to have the luxurious afternoon of walking with me alone, which is the Victoria from the Aylsham office up here.
Lovely.
Yeah, lucky girl. But the farming, you know, collect that you have dealt with in the past, a lot of them, I guess you've seen their names again coming in here, you know, on our contracts. How many years did you spend doing that? I mean, that must have, your formative years, did you go through a whole load of exams, obviously, in the time you were with them?
So yeah, I studied my AAT exams while I was there. Interestingly, I was doing some work on contracts here this week, and the first one I really got involved with was a client in Gimmingham, and I actually did a little bit of work at that farm. It was my first job that paid for my first bike, and that was at a farm in Gimmingham.
Is that a push bike?
Yes.
No, so you didn't have a motorbike?
No. Well, I did have a motorbike, a very small motorbike, and I was known for my little skid lid.
Yeah, but you had to get to work, don't you? You can't afford a car.
Indeed, but yeah, my first bike was one that I'd bought, and that was through the hours that I'd put in at this farm. So it's quite bizarre sort of coming in here, and the first contract that I got my hands on was actually that one at Gimmingham.
Yeah, well, that farm will still be there in 100 years' time, won't it?
I'm sure it will.
And we won't.
I believe it's owned by somebody else now, but it's still that farm. And it brings back some memories for me.
So, Lovell Blake, you know, you would have had the pleasure of doing farm accounts. So, I mean, that must be hilarious sometimes. I mean, I know farmers don't love it when I say horrid things about them, but I'm pretty rubbish at keeping records of certain things and getting receipts. Tell us a story about receipts.
So the early years at Lovell Blake, where you really cut your teeth is what we call incomplete records. So that's clients, be it farmers or whatever, that just bring their books and records in. They're not in particularly any real good shape. They can just be thrown in a bag, they can be thrown in a hold or whatever. Right. And there's numerous occasions where people would just turn up in reception and just drop them off, and you pick them up and you have to sort them out. So
you'd pick up a Sainsbury's carrier bag full
indeed.
Of...
Indeed, right. All that sort of stuff.
And what's the worst thing you found in a bag?
A dead rat.
Had it chewed through the account?
No, from what I remember, it was pretty dried up because I think it had been in there a while. It wasn't particularly smelly, but I do remember it was pretty horrible.
Definitely dead.
Yeah.
I don't think our accounts have ever been quite as bad as that, but yeah, it doesn't surprise me because, you know, record keeping and, well, historically, I guess they were worse than they are now because computers didn't exist, but one assumes people tap all these things out. Is there still people out there doing the same thing?
I mean, computers really changed the world of accountancy and changed my world to a degree. I suppose halfway through my career at Lovell Blake, I really got involved with computerised accounting. I did a lot of work on Sage, with Sage. I remember the first versions of Sage being based on MS-DOS with the old green screens, etc., etc. And I remember actually coming out to a client very, very close to where we're sitting and having this conversation today and dealing with Sage version 3.1, I believe it was, and we're now up to Sage version 29, so that just tells you how long ago that was. Mm. But computers absolutely changed the way we did things. You know, when I started, there was lots of handwriting. I remember my boss banning pens for a while because we were getting through loads of Tippex and telling us to use pencils, etc., etc. So, and this is only, what, 30 years ago?
Yeah, no, great. That sounds like an overhead saving man, like me. Pencils are cheaper than Tippex. Yeah, no, good lad.
Yeah, he was.
Who was that? Is he still with us?
Stephen Alderdice was his name.
Okay, is he still with us?
I have no idea. I lost touch with him when I moved away from that office.
He'd been a lot older than you in those days. 30 years added to him.
Yeah, he would be quite an old man now. Bless him.
Good on him. So, you know, having the excitement of opening up bags and finding dead rats, what made you move on from that? Because you went from Lovell Blake to another accountancy firm.
So I was in Incomplete Records for a while and then did some audit, moved into more specialist areas. So moved into computerised accounting and trying to outsource and get those clients coming in so we could do their books and records to make their life easier, as opposed to the old sort of conventional route of having farm secretaries doing that sort of...
I mean, that still works. People still have farm secretaries, and there's lots to be said about that, because they fulfil a role way beyond just doing the accounts, don't they?
Of course. There's
lots of things that they do, glue the whole farm operation together. So that's a fine balance.
It is. It is, agreed. Also, sort of really got to extend my knowledge of Excel, and obviously Excel... massive, massive product to all of us these days, but especially in accountancy. And just got to a point where I believed I became a little bit stagnant. So I was just looking for something different. Mm-hmm. So I saw a job come up in Reefham. This was about 1999, I believe.
So you've done your nine years.
Nine years, yeah. So there is
so
a...
There's an opening and it's a firm in the town next door and it's a different firm.
Exactly. So they were offering a little bit more money.
In the end, at certain points in your life, it's fairly critical. You want to achieve something. You have to have X amount of money to get that size mortgage to achieve it. You have to take that step regardless, don't you?
Indeed. So went out to see them. They were kind enough to offer me the job straight away. But this job was slightly different. So this was running a management accounts department. So this was me having some staff with me, under my direction. Mm-hmm. We had a pre-existing sort of client portfolio, but part of my role was going out and trying to extend that and get a few more. So we started off with something like 10 or so clients, but I think by the time we'd left, with putting Sage in as well, we're probably talking maybe 30 to 35. So that was a good achievement for me.
And your staff increased and you know, working as an individual in a team is one thing. Having people work for you, stroke with you, is not always the greatest of fun, is it? You know, motivating some people who you don't perhaps quite connect with or whatever.
Never had that problem. They were great, fortunately for me. They were fine. And we got on so well.
All my lot wince. Have you noticed that when I go out there? Oh, what's he want now? Just nod. Yeah, it'll be all right. He'll go away in a minute. He'll forget what he said because he's getting old. I hope not. No, anyway, so yes, an observation of working as an employee or as a team member and then becoming a manager of people is not the greatest moment in the history of mankind for some people. Some people love it. They love, you know, oh, you know who I am. But other people, I much prefer the ethos of team. Everybody's, you know, I'm very conscious to say, they don't work for me. I don't think they do. I think they work with me.
Absolutely.
And that, I hope, how they would all describe it.
But I'm not a great believer in the levels thing. So I prefer to work with people. I think you give respect to them, they give respect back, and you get a better...
Well, some people are really good at... You are really good at accounts. I am not. I'm really good at certain aspects of my job. Understanding, you know, the dynamics of the malting barley at harvest time, what happens next. Understanding the dynamics of future stores. Understanding the dynamics of when there's going to be pressure on a market. I've got a very little niche area of knowledge. That's what I'm good at. Everything else, I look to the people who have got working with me and I go, what's that mean? We were discussing that the dryer wasn't working properly earlier with one of the guys outside. And he started being technical with me and I just like did that glazed over face and stop, I said, you know, it's not going to go anywhere. So my point being that I bow to their superior and I assume they're going to do the right thing, which to a large degree generally works, I would say.
Absolutely right.
You might have noticed I haven't hassled you.
No, you haven't.
Yeah. And I'm particularly bad at responding to some of your questions, but yeah. Hopefully that kind of gives you a bit of, I don't know, feeling of autonomy, or, you know, you feel you have ownership of certain aspects of my business already. I'd like to think that's where you're at.
That's very fair. I've come in, I know what my remit is already. I've only been here a few weeks.
You got the plastic bag with the dead rat.
I haven't had the pleasure of seeing that yet.
These are HR documents. They're probably the equivalent of that. You've had a glance at them. It's like, oh, no.
The HR's not too bad, Andrew. It's really not too bad.
Well, that's because my wife did it.
Well, there you go.
She really did do it to a level, and we've just kind of like kept it in a cupboard or in the, you know, under a cushion somewhere. But and you've come in, picked up, and revised it, which is really good of you. So if we did, I don't know what inspections you get for HR, but whatever inspection it is, we're going to look like we really give a damn, aren't we? It's going to look really, really shiny.
I mean, the auditors will look at that. You know, it's important. HR is an important area for
me.
Can
we make it a thinner booklet so they charge less time for reading it then? Can we cut some pages out? It's bleeding enormous.
No. I think the importance with HR is getting to a good level and then just maintaining it.
Yeah, and get the auditors to read 2 pages. You read it all last year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You just tick it. Stop. That's not another 2 hours' work. Sorry, I'm digressing. So you worked for an alternative firm, and you were there for how many years were you in the Reefham firm?
I think it was about 5 years.
Mm-hmm. What was that?
That was Quinney's.
Quinney's. Okay, and then what happened? Because you worked for a guy that I know well from the rugby club.
Yeah. Mm. So towards the end of my tenure at Quinney's, there was a guy at Melton Constable who had a seafood company, and we were the auditors for that business. And he needed some assistance with his management accounts. Now, I'd first met this guy in about the year 2000, I believe. He'd had a problem with his Say software. He couldn't get something to balance. I remember popping out there, sorting him out in pretty quick time, thankfully. And we sort of always kept in loose touch. He needed some help with his management accounts. He was growing, the growing business.
That went really well, didn't it?
It was growing at the time. So I offered my services because I was running this management accounts department, et cetera, et cetera. And in very quick time, he was kind enough to turn around and offer me the job. And I joined that business in June 2005.
Yeah, been there ever since, haven't you?
I had, until that business was taken over by a larger business in January of this year.
Some people from up north. Aye. I dare say. And then they decided to relocate up north, didn't they?
They took that finance function with them. Yeah.
Which left you cast aside like an old sock, didn't it? And there we found you sobbing in the street.
Indeed.
That's not true. Their loss, our gain. I'm delighted to say that we, you know, managed to find each other in this, and, you know, you've been good enough to join. But with the conversation we had was, I did explain how rubbish I was at accounts. We did have an accountant we employed 7 years ago, but that didn't work out, and it was a bit of a bad experience for us, which we seamlessly covered and managed our way through without any bad PR. And ever since then, I've been trying to keep, you know, a fundamental look on stuff late into the evening, hence me going home late all the time, because I've done it in an old-fashioned way, which I'll admit to now. So hopefully I'll lose some of my hours to you and go home earlier and get slim and attractive again or whatever. Yeah, so the dynamic of our experience with accountants so far is starting from a very low base, and you've come in and been with us for a month, not run out the door screaming, which is a bonus, and you seem to be really, really getting your teeth into it.
To be fair, when I've walked in, you know, I could have walked into a car crash, but I haven't. Things are relatively...
fantastic. outstanding.
I think things are relatively solid. There's a few bits and pieces that I've had to get involved with and just streamline a few things. I'm now getting into the system more. Mm. It's a big system. It's quite an old system, but it's not a broken system. So it's a system that I'm going to try and work with. Already starting to get some information out of that system, doing some work with software developer themselves to try and get the best out of that software. Some of my history, especially where I come from, it's very systems orientated. I did take a break from being the accountant, if you like, at this seafood business to actually implement a system, which was a big challenge, especially when COVID hit halfway through that. So that was quite difficult, but it was a real learning experience for me. Not only learning about different types of computers, touch screens, and how they all come together, but actually learning about how systems operate and what good looks like and how data should be.
I'm glazing over.
Yeah, I know you are. I can see that.
Yeah, I mean, it's systems. Yeah. To me, the difference that a good business is profitable, a good business has happy employees, is fundamentally doing the right things. I mean, we've got our year end has just occurred, 30th of June. You've gone through with a reasonably fine tooth comb what we've put through the books. It's our second incredibly healthy year on the trot.
Yep.
We've had a very profitable year. Again, we've got the market right, which helps, and it helps our farmers. Last year, we didn't get our accounts done until literally the last minute. It was the end of March, which is the nine-month period you have to declare them. I'd like to think we're going to get them out within six this time round because of you. So when the auditor comes, they're going to have a lot less work.
Yep.
We're going to save some money on audit.
Yep.
Should do. And we'll be able to declare our figures, hopefully, by year end at the very latest or somewhere very close to that.
That's certainly the plan for me. I'm making good progress with them. We do have to give a little bit of time for what we call post-balance sheet events just to prove things happen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the emptying of stores, that would be handy because we're dragging our feet on that, or some people are, and determining whether we had a stock loss or stock gain. Now, normally we have a gain, but this year with the dry harvest, I think we'll have a loss. So that'll take a bit off the top, but largely there's enough there. I mean, we're the right side of the line, at least by a country mile, but it must be reassuring to see the kind of projection of what we've done over the last, you know, 13, 14 years. It is quite healthy. And, you know, what we're projecting forward for this year, it hasn't really got going yet, has it? So we're 1 month, half of a month into the new year, and it's a bloody miserable harvest with nobody combining and everyone's getting grumpy.
Yeah, I'm just looking outside and it's raining again.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to rain till Wednesday, so that's why we're talking about accounts, Vince. The other thing is, once you've got us sussed, because you know you're well onto it, and I will say this, I made this observation, Vince. I have never, in all of my years in the grain trade, ever had an accountant who actually is the guy at the business who says, okay, we're going to do the year-end stock check. And you go, okay. And you make an assumption that he's going to give a piece of paper to somebody and say, right, what have you got in there? What have you got in there? And take their word for it, because he doesn't want to climb up the top of bins or go into sheds and all that thing. You visited every single bin, every single shed, every single corner of our little business, didn't you? And I said, Vince, I've never had an accountant who's ever actually physically done the stock check himself or herself. All those years, it's always like they're far too clean and squeaky. And there you were, up and down those ladders like a mad thing.
I think it's a really important thing.
I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree. That's 100%. That's when I thought, right, I've got to keep this bloke because he's actually there doing this stuff physically. I can't, there's no bullshit going to go on with me saying there's 500 tons in that bin and you find it's empty.
I could have given a piece of paper to any of the guys here and they would have done as I would have asked. But without seeing it with my own two eyes, you know, it's not that I distrust anybody. There is nothing better than go and see in that stock yourself.
Knowledge.
Yes.
Yeah, knowledge. And it's given you a complete map of every single corner of the business, isn't it?
Well, it's not only seeing the stock, it's an opportunity to engage with the staff, it's an opportunity to go and engage with the third parties that we deal with. Relationships is really important, and it's a really important time for me. As I enter the business, I need to get to know the business, but I need to get to know the people that make the business tick.
Absolutely.
So it's an opportunity not to be missed. So,
yeah, good on you. Oh, that's impressive, and I'm delighted you did it. But more importantly, I'm impressed. I'm really impressed with that, because most accountants don't.
Some accountants wouldn't like it.
They send the bill, but they don't actually climb the bin. You know, when you've got us kind of taped, it's not that complex a business, is it? It's reasonably straightforward. Big volumes of money, well managed, if we've got the systems in place, it isn't going to take you every minute of every day, is it?
No.
And so we've got a bit of a plan or a bit of an idea between us that if the thing you learnt first is the thing that you're probably best at and you've added to that systems, we're kind of toying with the idea of utilising some of your skills out there in the great unwashed, isn't it? You quite miss having plastic bags with dead rats in, don't you?
Well, I don't really miss that side, Andrew, I have to be honest. But yeah, there's definitely, we believe, an opportunity there.
Yeah. So you, if we say that, you know, if you go to a big accountancy firm, they will do a bucket load of work for you at, you know, X rate per hour because they can, and they'll believe the bit of paper with the stock on or whatever. But, you know, for a farmer, you know, we think possibly helping people put their accounts together or helping them to get their accounts from one level to management level saves money on audit or whatever. There might be a niche. You've got the experience. You understand agriculture. You're within it. So there's something there that we'll push on this when you've got more time to do it. But just, you know, anyone listening out there, it's a little seed of an idea at the moment. We think we've got potentially someone who can help, not necessarily just farmers, any individual running a new business, making sure they've got systems in place and actually doing the accounts to a higher spec to give them more control of the business or a lower audit rate or something. Kind of what our idea is, isn't it? Is that the right way around?
Yeah, I think so. We can certainly add some benefit to some scenarios out there. You know, going back to those olden days when books and records came in carrier bags.
Whatever it takes to get those.
Yeah, whatever it takes. You know, the farmers, they're going to be really busy right now. Farmers do farming best. Accountants do accounting best. You know, there's good arguments to allow people to use their skill sets to the best of their potential. You do what you're good at. So, you know, farmers are there to farm. They don't necessarily want to do the bookkeeping. Mm. We're here to help if you so need.
Yeah, there's a skill set and hopefully some time available for that. So we'll be putting the odd reminder out sometime in the future when we're totally on top. We've got several audits to go through. We've got doing grain, doing properties, yeah, grain. Aylsham Grain is done by David Gilbert, who similarly started off with us lots of years ago and got lots of clients who does exactly that. You know, so there's a number of things you've got to see through, but there's going to be some time opportunities. And if it appeals to anybody, you know where we are. So hopefully within that, how do you see doing grain? How do we develop, Vince? What's in your head? You've been here a month. What do you think we should do next?
Well, I've got to be honest. I've only been here a month. I'm still learning, and there's a lot to learn. Harvest is now happening. I'm looking outside. I can see wagons.
It's raining.
It's raining. It's understanding the business better is another chunk of work for me now. When I joined, it was just prior to harvest, so there wasn't an awful amount going on. I could get my teeth into certain things. Now it's really happening. So harvest is happening, wagons are turning up. I can start to see what's happening on contracts, etc., etc. Once I get that understanding, then I can think about strategy and maybe some questions.
If they're easy, I'll answer them. Then I'll pass them on to someone like Ben or Webby. We now have a potential new podcaster every now and again. We might now be saying, right, Vince, where are we at? And you have to come in and join in with the banter. But, you know, I want to welcome you. I want all of the listeners to understand that, you know, I'm going to have some more time off because I've got Vince here who's going to do the horrible I nearly said bad word then, who does the horrible stuff that I don't like doing. And hopefully it will polish us up in terms of some of those things that you just keep putting off. And get my tax paid on time, that'd be probably
better. You know, it's weird. There's a lot of things I like in life. Obviously, my family, I like food, I like beer,
yeah.
I love football, Norwich.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you only do that so your rest of your life seems good going to Norwich, don't you? Because this season's going to be rubbish, isn't it?
I'm sort of a bit on the fence with that. But the other thing I do love, I love my job. I love what I do. I love numbers. I always have done, and I think I always will do.
Well, hopefully, Vince, we will have lots of numbers for you to count.
Very good.
I like the way that finished.
Very good, very good.
Yeah, cool. Anyway, Vince, all the best. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you subscribe to get updates on new episodes and when they are released. And follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at Dewing Grain. Call Dewing Grain on 01263 731 550 or email info@dewinggrain.co.uk. The Dewing Grain podcast is produced by East Coast Design Studio. a full-service creative agency specialising in websites, digital marketing and branding. Get in touch to inquire with their friendly team on info@eastcoastdesignstudio.co.uk